The Ensemble podcast is intended for professional financial advisors. All discussion is limited to publicly available information and should not be interpreted as legal, professional, or financial advice. Ensemble does not hold an AFS license nor provide any financial services. Before making investment decisions, you should obtain financial advice from a qualified financial advisor.
Hi, I'm Andrew Rocks, and welcome to the Ensemble Licensee podcast series. Ensemble is all about the positive evolution of financial advice and the ecosystem that is advice has the advisor, who we support voraciously. It has the practice, who via the engine room have had their moment in the sun, but the missing link was the licensee. It was not just a risk framework, but a go-forward organisation, as big and small, that put the foundation down to allow all of that to happen. So strap in and enjoy the Ensemble Licensee podcast series. Cheers.
For over 25 years, PM Capital has taken the road less travelled, delivering a disciplined, high-conviction approach to global investing and uncovering opportunities often overlooked by conventional investment strategies. Their Global Companies Fund has significantly outperformed the MSCI World Index since inception, driven by deep research, patience, and alignment with clients. In today's changing landscape, they offer clarity and conviction to help build more resilient portfolios. Learn more at www.pmcapital.com.au/explore.
Hello and welcome back to the Licensee podcast series. I'm Andrew Rocks and I'm here and we're going to play a game because I've had three goes. My enunciation's terrible. So Kieran, you get to cheer and you give a thumbs up or down. And it's Keneal, which I believe is correct.
Not even close.
Oh, no, I've got that one. No. Okay, so I wanted to create that. I figured that my authentic vulnerability was not even close, was the comment there. Is that right?
Pretty much.
Keneal?
Connell Canary.
This is so fun. It's fun. We did spend a few minutes and I got it wrong that often that I deserve to have it wrong for records.
We wrote it down phonetically, mate.
Yeah, that's it. We even wrote it down. So, guys, as you know, if you know my background, the real star of the show is the guest and I'm just but a foil and a dumb one at that. So, but jokes aside, we're here with one of the directors of Cobalt. AFSL licensees, welcome formally.
Thank you for having me.
You've got a bit more going on than just Cobalt, and we're going to unpack that. And I'm also probably going to ask you about just some general questions about, the relationships between licensees and advisors, and because you've given some great insights off sort of mic, and I'm really keen to sort of unpack those. But no one goes to school on the what do you want to be when you grow up day and has in a little piece of paper that they want to be the responsible manager of an AFSL. So maybe take me back to where it all began and what got you into this industry.
No, I think you're wrong again, because back in when I was in grade 7, I was on that TV show Amazing. I don't know if you know this. That's basically the biggest thing, the best thing I've ever done in my life. And they ask you, what do you want to be when you grow up? And
57 minutes left. It's devoted entirely to that.
And I said, I want to be a financial advisor.
Is that right?
No, I'm joking.
Okay.
So, no, you are right. You don't want to be a financial advisor when you are young. I knew you were going to ask me this question. I don't know that I have a good answer for you, but I'm going to blame my father. The funny name that got you tripped up is obviously Irish.
Yes.
We immigrated here when I was, 2 or 3, lost the accent. Dad was an electrician, but before it was cool, they were buying property and renovating property before realestate.com existed. They always bought houses on main roads. So, if they wanted to sell it, people would see the for sale sign.
Wow.
That's how their mentality. So, that's the household that I grew up in. And Dad also was self-employed. So, I remember learning about GST when it came out and learning about capital gains tax before everybody else. So, I don't know that I had a choice other than getting into being self-employed and being in this world.
And do you have any other siblings?
Yeah, older brother, younger brother.
So, is one a real estate agent, one's a carpenter, and you did books?
You'd think so. No. No, one's an engineer, one's government. But no, you just get into it. But, real estate, you do mention. I had a stint in real estate and you have all these questions. Should I buy? Should I sell? How do I mitigate capital gains tax? And when I first got into financial advice, I thought those questions were going to be really easy to answer. And you learn really quickly that a lot of advisors couldn't answer those questions. And the traditional advisor that didn't have that strategic background. So I think I got into financial advice to try to help answer some of those questions for the people like my parents, and then soon found out that the industry isn't what I thought it was. And I think it's been a bit of a quest since then to do what we want to do.
And you attended uni in Queensland, in Brisbane, and you did the accounting degree or Bachelor of Commerce, which is probably playing into that. And so when you completed that, did you, you know, what was the gap, or what did you do before you made your way into what we're about to say is the magnificence of the Horizons Academy from AMP?
Look, like every great young male, we try a number of different things. My first degree was IT and education. Like, I wanted to be a teacher. I really like in explaining things and teaching people things. I found out pretty quickly there wasn't a whole lot of money in teaching. And then someone recruited me into a real estate agency where I was helping them grow that business. And that's where I had the I can do this better than you idea. Started my own real estate agency, then realized I didn't want to do that. So it just has evolved from there to here. And I did find that AMP Horizons that so many great advisors went through. Like, actually, you've got to give...
I think three of the four founding partners of Ensemble.
If they did anything great, that is something they did. And I met my business partner, Ben, who's 50-50 in everything, at AMP Horizons, and I met my wife. So
good.
Probably one of the best decisions of my life.
Yeah, wow. Okay. And so you guys all met as aspiring advisors in the program.
Yep. And turned out Ben lived a street away from me in Brisbane.
Yep.
And my wife was a investments BDM in Zurich, and her dad's a financial advisor. And so I went from not being in the industry to being pretty heavy in the industry pretty quickly.
Okay. And at what age were you roughly when this was all happening?
Oh, good question. I don't know, 10, 12 years ago? 2014 is when we did it.
Okay. And so the fact that you were that your parents were self-employed, what are sort of two or three things that's instilled in you?
I would say that problem solving. When you have someone like your dad going, well, I'm not going to do it that way, I'm going to do it this way, or I can solve that problem over here, you just get that mentality of, oh, yeah, well, if there's something broken, you can fix it. So if you don't like something, you don't need to sit with it. You go, well, there's another solution out there. I think that's probably one of the bigger ones.
Listen to a podcast recently that improved your professional knowledge? Grab the transcript, head to cpdcheck.com and record your learning.
When I was sort of in financial planning years and years ago, I also owned investment properties at the same time. And I always thought it was unusual that the financial planning industry made you do the super and the managed funds investments and said, don't look at these. And, you know, and it was very much firewalled. And, you know, how did you reconcile the fact that you got quite immersed into one industry and you went into the other one, which was investment advice, and they kind of suggest investments for everything, including listed property, but not that one?
Mm-hmm. It was just the same thing. It didn't make sense to me. So I just kept asking questions and finding solutions. There isn't anything in the legislation that says you can't give strategic advice. You're literally, I don't want to go down that rabbit hole, but it is propaganda from a lot of the industry participants that you're not allowed to do certain things, or you've got to stay within these lines, etc. And it doesn't take an idiot to work out that insurance equals insurance commission, and back then farm equaled percentage. We can't make anything out of property, so don't do that. If you're taking money out of the farm, that's money we're losing. So it's the industry has changed for the better, and we've gone to fixed fees, and that's probably why you're going to see more of this stuff come out. But take all that away, you've got someone who's got a question that isn't being answered. So you've got to get an answer to it.
So you've rolled into the AMP Horizons Academy. I actually don't know whether you've got any financial planning knowledge. Seems like you've got a good mate and a business partner and a fantastic wife out of it. But at the end of that program, did you go into there where you bought some clients and kicked off? Because it wasn't that long afterwards that you kind of kicked off this venture.
So I will speak positively of my experience at the academy. You do learn things you don't know. So take someone like my dad, or probably you when you are a property investor, you know what you know and you know what you can work out, but you don't know what you don't know. So learning about things like pension in super, I didn't know it was 0% tax in super. Well, you'll talk to an Australian today and they don't know it. You don't know what a TTR is. So you're learning all these base fundamental strategies, and you're told, we also have an AMP with APL with thousands of options. Go out there, do what you want to do, be what you want to be. Yeah. So then you go, great, I'm going to start trying to advise some clients in my first year. And a few things happened. One was I felt I didn't know enough. You know, you meet those clients who maybe they've got cancer and they're trying to like work out insurance claims at some really serious stuff. You're kind of like, someone who's just out of AMP Horizon shouldn't be doing this. And I want to refer you to a real quote, end quote, financial advisor. But also you'd get these clients and you'd sit in a room and let's go, hey, let's all talk about the strategy of what we should do here. And as soon as you brought in property or anything that had what they were calling complex strategies, what I grew up with, I didn't think it was complicated. These questions that, you know, weren't able to be answered. And they use this shield of compliance to go, oh, no, we can't answer that. Well, why not? Oh, for compliance reasons, which, you know.
You feel like, I mean, the common theme of problem solving was even before the tape was rolling. What was the catalyst? What was the moment that you and Ben went, we believe that we can build a better widget?
I speak to advisors, a lot of advisors. I would say one a day of a person who's not a part of the dealer group and they're just calling us to have a chat and ask me questions. And one of the common threads is the, what can I do? I feel like I'm being stuck. I feel like someone's stopping me from doing the business I want to do. And I would say that it wasn't one big thing. It was lots of little things. And I'm not trying to speak ill of anyone I've interacted with in the past because this is a big machine and it does need to turn. But I want to use digital signatures, or I want to use this particular software, or I want to use this particular power planner, or I don't have any clients, so I want to do my own power planning. There are all these like little blocks that get in the way. And for some people in their businesses, they need those shackles to be released so that they can actually fulfill their little financial planning destiny, not be held back.
And look, the last sort of statement you've made is pretty on point. I'm going to read your own one off your website.
Yeah.
We try being employed advisors. We try being self-employed advisors through traditional dealer groups. It was all too hard, too expensive, and ultimately affected the advice we could give. Instead, we decided to create a modern AFSL that solved the problems that we were and are still having as advisors, aiming for efficient common sense compliance. We don't want a percentage of your business, so we decided to stick with reasonable fixed fees, and we're sure you understand when we say we have an APL without an agenda. That's why we're Cobalt. We just like the color. So you are singing from the said hymn book there. So, and what was the, I mean, you've also, to be fair, you're also Brillium advisors as well.
Did you confuse it?
No. Well, you've got the two there, and a big shout out to both those cohorts. And you're very proud of the practices who are there. When I scroll your website, they're there, their brand, they're out and proud, and they must obviously be very proud of each other and yourself. Is that a common theme in the way you think that your people think of you?
100%. You will also notice on our website a little tuna can. I'll come back to that.
Yeah, I have.
Yes, we are proud of our advisors. We like to do things differently, and people often ask, like, how do you choose which advisors you let on your license and which one you don't? Well, you would say no to more advisors than we say yes to. And primarily, it's culture. You're looking for good advisors who put the client first. There's this crazy compliance idea that we have that if you look after the clients, everything else will fall into place far better. If the client's been looked after and then you could do the right paperwork, etc., everything's going to go a whole lot better for everybody. So, one of our ways in which we pick our advisors is, would I refer a friend or family member to them? If that answer is no, well, they don't have any place on our license. If the answer is yes, well, then you can keep having that conversation. So, that tuna can at the bottom is, well, who we reject makes us the best. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with those advisors. It's just not our culture and the way we do it.
And look, an absolute, shameless attempt to get John West Company as a sponsor Ensemble.
Also,
it's the John West.
Yeah.
What John West regrets. So, Kieran, if we could organize a meeting with me and the John West business, the synergies galore.
I didn't think anyone was going to notice it. Now I feel like I'm going to get sued for it. But anyway.
Well, the John Best, it's an Audi one.
Great.
So, it's going to be, it's very good. But you're right. I mean, that culture's led by the top, and yourself and Ben emulate that. I'm going to probably pose some questions later on about the scalability of that.
Sure.
You know, people listening might be going, that sounds good if you're here, but you know, what if you wanted to grow and whatnot? But then, so you decided to do this. You've whereabouts were you? Which were you in Brisbane when you?
I was in Melbourne. Ben was in Brisbane, and it was just, we just did the usual thing that other advisors do, go, hey, let's switch dealer groups. What else is out there? Can we just solve our problems? Not every dealer group is right for every advisor, but you just need to pick the one that's right for you.
Yep.
I tried to do that and I just kept getting the same answers. It was very much risk focus. So what they're trying to do is mitigate risk. So they want to take your money and mitigate that risk is the game I think they're playing. So we thought, nah, we'll just get our own license. Fine. To those smaller businesses out there, it was easier for us. There was two of us. We were able to split the bills and split the work and split the admin process. So it was definitely easy for us, but that was probably the first step in, let's get our own license.
And I've got to ask, you started Cobalt in April 2019 and Brillium in December 2020. For those playing while at home, something happened pretty quickly globally very soon after that. Did you have offices at the time or were you just bootstrapping? So and when COVID happened, how many advisors in were you?
I did have all this data. I just didn't bring it. But I think what it was I was in Melbourne. Ben was in Brisbane. We didn't have an office and it was all very...
Ben didn't know COVID existed compared to you, to be brutally honest.
Oh, don't get me started on the Melbourne lockdowns. So it was just a slow start and we got a few more advisors and then COVID is what pushed me back up to Brisbane. So I bought a house off the internet where I grew up. We were then able to buy an office in Brisbane, and I think that probably helped when you're in the same room every day with your business partner working on the business. So it was just exponential growth from there. Yeah, there was probably a COVID element to it.
And very much building community. We're going to come to a few really cool things that you've done and imaginative things you've done outside of the tuna can. You also are an owner or director in What If Advice and Accounting, which is Coalface Financial Planning. So what came first, the chicken or the egg? Did the AFSL come before this one or the other way around?
Yeah, so I was What If Advice Melbourne. Ben's What If Advice Brisbane. Let's find a new dealer group for us. So that was the order. So What If Advice comes first. We look for our own dealer group, decide to get our own. We started applying for our own FSL when people who we knew heard about it, they were already saying, hey, can we join? Gotcha. So it started as a self-licensing idea and turned into a dealer group idea before it was even, the license was even given to us.
I'll ask a question without notice. And can you remember who your first couple of firms came on board? Who were the first, the Merry Men and Merry Women?
Well, you're not going to be shocked that some of them were AMP Horizons advisors who are still on us today. We did our Cobalt Quarterly today where we get everyone together and we have a conversation with, we gave
everyone.
Yeah. So
all hands.
All everyone, once a quarter, everyone's in a chat that we talk to. We gave our awards for the year to our people. One of the guys that got an award was one of our AMP Horizons alumni, James Harris. There you go. Call out to him. So it starts in these bases, but our growth has been 100% word of mouth. We've never done any advertising. We've never even tried to get advisors. It's just, hey, I heard these guys were good. BDMs, Sprucus, Ensemble has been helpful. It's just been organic growth.
And although nothing's guaranteed, you are in Sydney today to attend an award ceremony,
mm-hmm.
at the same set award ceremony where you won Dealer Group of the Year last.
No, we didn't win, just finalists.
Gotcha. Okay. So maybe it's time to hopefully, by the time this comes out, Kieran, we can dub something in this gap.
Yeah.
And we can
have winner off. Look, I would say to other advisors, the IFA is fantastic. If you haven't got on board, you should submit yourself for some awards. I do think clients really like that, if you're a finalist in something, it does show to clients that, you're out there and you are trying. I think a lot of really great advisors out there have, that syndrome where they're like, I'm not good enough. And you are, trust me, you are, please apply. You might not win, but even just that little badge on the website does help. And if nothing else, for SEO.
And personally, rewinding a bit, you met your wife as part of ANC,
yep.
AMP Horizons. She doesn't seem to have made it onto the front page of your website.
Oh, I think she's on the front page of What If Advice.
Oh, okay. Just double checking. I was looking at Cobalt there. So fundamentally, yeah, you all just went all for one, one for all.
Yep.
And did that. Now, maybe get a few more details about your licensee for people who aren't in it. How many practices have you got?
Yeah, so we have about 70 practices. We've got 70 advisors across the two, yeah. And it's like a 1.3 to 1.5 average. So, I don't know, 45 practices maybe.
Yep, okay. And what's the, I suppose, the avatar of the type of practice you've got now, and where would you like to see that go to over the next 24 months?
I would say that the avatar of our advisors is firstly, like, I almost characterize them as just really good advisors who care about the client more so than any other metric. It's not about FUM or it's not about how many advisors. They're just really good people. And if you start talking about the client, they get excited. So I would call it as that would be one of the metrics. But a lot of them come to us with problems. It could be I have a problem of how do I get from being employed to self-employed? How do I go from being a one-man band working way too many hours a week? How do I scale? Or the next one where I've got a few advisors and it's just a lot is going on. I both want to grow and work less. So the problem, I would say, is the theme.
I'm going to unpick one of those.
Yep.
I'm a one-man band. I'm working way too long. How do I scale? I ask you that question. What do you answer with?
It's a good question. It's a common problem and it isn't a one-size-fits-all. Maybe that's my problem.
Yeah.
The advice a lot of people get is this one, you should go and dot, dot, dot. You should go and get a VA in the Philippines. You should go and get a referral from an accountant. You should go in blah, blah, blah. Maybe my thing is we spend a lot of time talking to our advisors and it's not a one-stop problem. It is what's happening in your business and what is it that's making...
It's a deep listening.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
So a really common one is, how long is it taking you to create your strategy? And they're like, well, I'm a really great advisor. I'm going to spend a week on this strategy. I'm like, well, then that's your problem. Or is it that I don't have enough leads? Well, then that's your problem. Like, it's not the same. And this Band-Aid fix isn't the solution. It's us trying to work out what is happening in the business. We've sat in meetings with these advisors who are supposed to be great with numbers. And you go, do you know the answer to this problem? And they go, no. And we say, you need to fire that person, or that you've got too many admin staff or whatever it is. And we will then say, great, this is your next goal. You need to go and get rid of this person. When are you going to do it by? I'll do it this month. Like, no, you're doing it this week. And I'm going to talk to you on Friday and you can tell me how it's done. Bring in the solution, but also a little bit of accountability to help these businesses move forward.
And is these reactionary conversations ever practices, or do you have any sort of fixed cadence when you touch base with your practices?
Both. Some are really great at putting their hand up and saying, I need help on this particular topic and I know what my problem is. Some put their hand up and say, I don't know what my problem is. Can you help me? And others, we can see a problem. They think there's no problem and we have to have that conversation and say, hey, there's something going on. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And so with the type of, so you give me an idea of the type of advisor they're passionate about their clients. When I'm looking at your website, I'm looking at, the average age of a financial planner in Australia. I might get this wrong. Might be just under 50.
Yep.
That does not look like the average age of your cohort.
It's
so,
not.
So what, where do they sit and what are the sort of clients that they work with?
The average age is 41 on our group. I'm 42. So
it feels about 7 or 8 years younger than the average.
Yeah.
Which is like almost getting towards one whole generation as far as.
Yeah. Because I think people who are technology driven or let's do something different, that's not to say that we don't have a full spectrum of ages, because we do. But if you're looking for something different, if you're wanting a change, that seems to be a common theme. Yeah.
And when you mentioned sort of technology there, what's the tech? Where do you fit in the tech as far as, do you mandate? Is it open? Do you advise? Maybe give us a feel there, because, you know, I would assume that would be something that you guys would be quite good at as an outsider looking in.
Yeah. We tend to have these two different conversations when we're talking to our advisors. Yes, we have What If Advice, and we almost use that as like an open source financial planning practice.
Well, let's tell everyone what If Advice, because, you know, I've referenced it. That was your coalface one.
Yep.
And let's talk to me about how it operates in conjunction with your licensee, and do you use it as a beta test? Is it your guinea pig sometimes for policy?
Yes and no. So I'll go back to the last question and I'll explain that. So on your technology front, the pillar is, I don't want to stop anyone from doing the business they want to do. If you want to use certain software, use it. If you want to do this, use it. We're going to put the framework so it works around. But then one of the things we can do is say, hey, over here at What If Advice, this is what we do. So here's like an option, or this is an example.
Yep.
So back to your what is What If Advice. It's the first business, financial planning business that we started, and it was separate. Firstly, me and Ben were separate. We didn't even you know, I had my clients, he had his clients. It became obvious that if you start sharing resources, sharing expenses, it's all a bit more economies of scale. So it was separate to the dealer group. So you'd have people, you'd find advisors, you'd give them licensing, and what if advice would sit off over on the left? We started to meet these really fantastic advisors, but the leap from being employed to self-employed was too great a leap.
Gotcha.
You would, going from having a salary of X to then having negative expenses, like going from positive 100 grand a year to negative 40 grand a year, that is really, really hard. And hopes and dreams aren't always going to do it. So what you're seeing on our website with those different licensing options, option one is effectively a hybrid between being employed and self-employed to try to get you through that first period of being a self-employed advisor. We use What If Advice, but also other advisors on the group have a similar option.
So what does that look like when you, what does a hybrid option look like?
Yep. So it's just think revenue split as opposed to licensee fees.
Got it. Yeah.
And ownership of clients. So
if they bring in a client, they can take it with them. Let's unpack that. So if I'm with What If Advice and I've got a revenue split, and what you're doing is you're just lowering the expenses and fractionalizing the upside.
Yep.
You're covering, and you know what you're doing, right?
Yep.
And then I want to go and get my own brand and my own marketing and then stay within your AFSL.
Yep.
You'll just transfer the ones they brought in to them. Is that right?
Well, it is. It's commercial though. So they own their clients, and this is just talking generally about What If Advice right now.
Yep.
Those guys own 100% of their clients.
Yep.
So if they want to, let's say they build up to 100 clients and 50 of them are theirs and 50 of them are ours.
Yep.
They choose. You want to take the 50 and go? If you want to go to a different AFSL, it's your life. You go and do what you want to do.
Gotcha.
But do you want to take all 100? So then do you want to buy your other half?
So they're buying on a pre-existing
model. And we agree with that at the start, so there's no question mark.
That's a good one.
Or do you want to leave all of them? Like, we'll take your clients back. Like,
it's, 'cause there'll be another person
exactly right
to come through. And,
yep.
Yeah, yep. Okay.
And we've, you know.
So that does a couple of things. One is it makes that part of the business, you're solving problems.
Mm-hmm.
You're providing a triage in for those sort of career changes in particular.
Yep.
And do you, as far as the size of it, it looks like probably by the number of ARs, one of the largest businesses in your group. So
yep.
It's probably going to encounter growing pains as a business before the other ones are looking for your advice potentially.
Yeah, What If Advice has more solutions, I think, what we've got, is because we have encountered those problems. It will be things like, well, how do you streamline those particular processes, or what are you doing with CRMs, or what are you doing with technology? It is one of the bigger businesses. What have we got? Six advisors, I think, now. So we can then speak to our advisors going, well, we solved this problem this way.
And do your advisors, are they predominantly holistic, or do you have any ones that specialize just in life insurance, or...?
I would generally say the holistic is the word I would use. I'm not saying that I'm against an advisor who scales. I would pick an advisor who niches as opposed to scales, if that makes sense. We've got some who will do, you know, firefighters, or some that loves ethical. I'm okay with that. Just one, it's got its issues.
Yep.
Like, I'm not against it, but again, culturally, I think we like the holistic advisor.
Yeah, no worries. And the way in which you engage, so you're reasonably agnostic as to the tech
mm-hmm.
platform, but you will give guidance when asked.
Yep.
And in relation to the scaling of their businesses, you mentioned that you're available, and some ring you and some don't, and all the rest of it. And even as recently as today, you had an all hands meeting where you sort of celebrate the wins.
Yep.
Which kind of, in a small business, you know, when they're back in their own business of 1.3 advisors and maybe the, you know, another one or two support staff, it's not a big business. It gets pretty lonely there. And tell me other things that you've done from a creative perspective. And this is the lead up.
Yeah, I'm sensing a segue.
Okay. Do you play any games with advisors?
Yeah.
So tell us all about the advisor games. It's awesome.
It's a good segue, but I will tell you where it came from.
Great.
And it's exactly what you're saying. It is lonely being an advisor.
Very.
I don't know that the single advisor that starts at zero and gets to somewhere in 12 months does not get enough credit. They do not know how hard it is. They then get slapped with ASIC fees and CSLRs. It's friggin' hard. So then you go out and you go, you know what? I'm going to go to this trade show or wherever I'm going to go, and I'm going to sit at a round table like this, and I'm going to listen to the person on the stage. And two things occurred to us. One is the person spoke for an hour, but I actually really liked like 5 minutes of what they said.
Yeah.
So if it was me speaking to that person, I would have drawn that 5 minutes out in 5 or 10 minutes, and I'm not getting that. So yep. Why am I coming to these events to listen to these people bang on? And the people I really want to speak to in the room is the people at my table, but I'm whispering to the person next to me and I'm whispering to the person right, and I can't talk to the person at that table over there. Advisor networking, as you guys are aware, is one of the most valuable things for advisors, is talking to other advisors, talking to advisors in their same position, in a similar business, in a business that's a little bit beyond, in a business that does it completely different, one that prices differently. So somewhere from that, the advisor games was born, which was, you know, we have to do PD days. We don't have to, but we like to do PD days in our licensing group. But man, are they boring? Can we make it more entertaining? So it went from, instead of having a PD day where people are standing up, the first one we did was the Amazing Race. You're putting advisors into teams. They're meeting the BDMs.
Was that the Sydney one?
No, the Brisbane one, the year before.
Brisbane one, and then, yeah, because I did, I think we spoke about it. Our office was a checkpoint here in Sydney one time. But interestingly, you have advisors that aren't just in your licensee that rock up.
Yeah, it's not for that. It's for advisor networking.
Yeah, well,
and I want our advisors to speak to advisors on our group and external. A big one is self-licensed advisors who don't have homes or any of these big groups or any to attend. They're the ones that tend to come, as well as our advisors and, you know, younger advisors who are up for a bit of fun. And then self-licensed advisors tend to come to those games too.
What's a day look like? You're going to do one again this
year? Yeah, we've got more coming up, but it really depends. There's different themes.
The advisorgames.com.au. Put in the links, Kieran.
Yeah, so we've done Amazing Race. We did Squid Games. We literally replicated all our games from Squid Games. No one died.
We not.
No one died. We just had Advisor Wars, which was Star Wars themed. We do smaller events. So we might do just advisor catch-up drinks in the office or in offices around the country. We do charity poker, which is hilarious, where the winner gets to give all the money to charity of their choice. We're doing something at the start of next year, which is BDM speed dating, where I want to get maybe 10, 15, 20 BDMs and advisors in a room. So you get to kind of meet all these people quickly, quick fire in both directions. Everybody wins.
Wow, you can swipe left or right on a BDM.
That would be funny. You're talking about BDM Tinder. So it's like, you guys all line up in a row, and if I want to speak to you, I'll talk to you. Otherwise, next.
We're going to have some brave and vulnerable BDMs. But look, to be honest, I think it works for them as well. Mm. You know, sometimes, as often as we say, advisors don't want to spend an hour to get 5 minutes of gold. If I'm in a BDM, quite often I only want to, if I can find the 5 minutes of where I can find value in your practice,
yep,
let's get that out, right?
Great.
Yeah. So it's interesting.
And just like advisors, there's some really great BDMs out there that can really add value to your business. They can really help. They can connect you with the people you want to connect to.
They're so good. And they can benchmark you because they're in practices every day. And,
yep,
and they kind of can cut through the BS because, you know, they kind of see if you're a business and you're doing volume, they get a feel for it as well, which is very interesting. So you've kicked that off. You know, that just sort of leans into the culture and community aspect of it as well. And you have a lot of other self-licensed businesses in that. Was there any kind of recruitment sort of? No, you're shaking your head. That translates awesome for podcasts, in case everyone's wondering.
Call it a shake of a head and a pause. When you're talking about recruitment, are you saying you're trying to build the area up? Because we haven't done any recruitment.
It doesn't appear that. So let's talk about that. You've got 45 practices at the moment. I normally say, what's your aspirations? How do you want to grow your business? And we had a session before and you say, well, no, I'm not looking for quantity. I'm looking for, this is the bit where you get to.
Yeah, it's quality. So if we didn't add another advisor ever again, it is totally fine. However, if someone's going to call us up tomorrow and they're asking for help, then of course we'll have a conversation with them. We will only add advisors that are good advisors. We'll only ever add advisors that are, you know, add to the culture. It's just, I don't know, I guess maybe people expect us to say we're trying to grow to from 70 to 100 or to 200. It's not that kind of goal. We are, of course, trying to grow our underlying business, and we're, of course, expanding vertically and horizontally. That sounds super cliche. So we're obviously still growing.
I'm expanding horizontally.
Christmas is coming. I think you're all will in a second. So it's not about the lack of growth. It's just not in that direction. I just don't know that we use number of advisors as the qualifier. But it's a tough industry out there. Just this week, I think I'm getting close to 15 emails/phone calls of people freaking out about what their current dealer groups are doing to them. We've had the Interprac thing that's going on. I think the Interprac story has brought to the forefront that there are levers that dealer groups can pull to manipulate advisors and their businesses.
That are what, hidden inside the legalese?
Yeah.
What would be examples of those?
If you want to leave a dealer group, you need to jump through their hoops.
Yep.
The power that is given to an AFSL is there for a reason. You're responsible.
Yeah.
It is a really important role to be
responsible. Not an irresponsible manager.
Exactly right. So it's a responsible manager.
Yeah.
So, but unfortunately, some of these places are using their power for evil instead of good. So you might go, hey, I'm trying to leave this dealer group. I don't like X, Y, and Z. And they will either give you really bad audits on the way out.
Weaponizing their exit audits.
Basically, weaponizing exit audits. And then this whole, you know, you've got PI, runoff PI cover. You need to pay. Here's a 10 grand bill, 30 grand bill. 100 grand bill if you want to leave.
So, I mean, look, I'm going to come at this having no knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
When I was self-licensed and I sold a business, I paid runoff cover in my PI, but I was the self-license holder.
Yep.
But if I'm under someone else, I'm not the holder of the PI, mm-hmm. am I?
Correct.
So, do you have to pay runoff cover? Isn't it the responsibility of the head co?
My official comment's going to be have a look at your car agreement.
Got it. Okay. Well,
A car agreement, it's probably going to say something along the lines of, we may opt to charge you PI runoff cover.
Yep.
And it's there for a reason. And it's in those cases, maybe there's an outstanding complaint or maybe there is some reason why the PI that I have got you covered for isn't potentially going to cover an issue in the future. They're taking that and extrapolating it out.
And anything else? I mean, any other sort of, because you sort of mentioned to me earlier about you just really like to open up, sort of add a bit of transparency around, you know, the business of relationship advisors to AFSLs, like the relationship that some think they have versus the some they had. Any other like tips that people could look out for? You're not giving advice. I totally understand that.
Yeah, look, I think the biggest one is choose a dealer group the same way you choose a business partner. You're actually getting into a relationship with this person, and that's not how you would choose a piece of software or a subscription or an outsource provider. When you're outsourcing it, you go, hey, I'm going to pick this. If it doesn't work out, I'm then going to move on to the next one. It's not how it works. You are getting into...
Yeah, 30 days notice, all care, no responsibility.
That's exactly right. So it doesn't work that way. So much the way that you would say to your clients, let's go and check 3 super funds, do the same for you. Go and check, like, talk to multiple dealer groups. Do your due diligence. There's a lot of great questions that you could be asking. And it could be the questions like, have you ever charged PI runoff cover? What was the last exit look like? There's a lot of these questions. Call some of the advisors on the license and say, hey, what's your experience like? It's a really big decision. Don't do it lightly. And it's not a sales pitch. Like, I'm not saying I'm trying to get advisors to come to us. I'm saying just please do your research.
On your actual website, you've got a bunch of sort of bullet points or whatnot. You've got, and one of them is advisor run, which we've gone through. Local directors, interesting. One's reasonable and fixed fees and month-to-month car agreements.
Mm-hmm.
So does that intimate that you that they're not locked in, that they can?
Yeah. So I do think that since we created this, the industry has changed. I think 30 days notice and 60 days notice is becoming more common.
Yeah.
But it wasn't that long ago that there was like you're locked in for a year.
But I can't remember what the AMP contracts were, but yeah. I don't imagine they were.
Yeah,
they were frictionful, weren't they?
But it was then, you know, you're locked in for a year, but I'm going to negotiate this 3-4 months beforehand. So you are kind of stuck in this relationship that you can't get out of. If you asked a financial advisor tomorrow that said, "Hey, one of your clients wants to leave, what are you going to do to retain them?" Your response is going to be, "Well, I don't want the client if they don't want to be with me.
Yeah.
Obviously, they don't see the value in what I do. I do see the value in what I do. Have a nice life." I think that's probably how we see it. Ironically, though, we don't have too many advisors leaving other than for, you know, selling their books or retiring or whatever.
Part of the reason I wanted to do this series after doing the, you know, I'm interested in business as probably, you know, AFSL legislative risk was probably not something that keeps me sort of excited. But I did it because more AFSLs are providing really practical business levers for their practices. You've just mentioned that people leave, sometimes they sell their books. If someone was to want to sell a business inside you, or alternatively, they wanted to buy another business and come in, what's the level that you guys lean in? Do you give them guidance? Do you recommend them to banks with tripartite relationships? Do you have tripartite relationships? Just that kind of that business partnership stuff.
It's funny you speak to financial advisors, and one of their comments is, I'm not a business person, I'm a financial advisor. They themselves don't understand a lot of this stuff. So you are explaining what a transfer deed or what a tripartite agreement is or how this works. So effectively, we're on the advisor's side is how I would articulate it. So do they need to try to get finance? What do they need to say to the banks? Who should they speak to? Where should they start? We have done some inter-AFSL transactions. So,
because you're on both, so you've got to
exactly right
them, yeah.
Yeah.
Are they easier or harder?
I think they've been easier in some ways because it's staying on the same license. You can see through some of this stuff, which is it easier. But also just getting finance is not easy as a financial advisor. Again, you might know something about that. So we're just generally there to help.
Well, it's easy if you've got a house, but if you want it to be not secure against property, it's harder.
Some of these people also just need an ear. I want to talk it through with someone.
Correct.
They can't necessarily go and speak to their partner about it, or who else are they going to go and talk to? We're not lawyers, but hey, we'll have a look at the contract for you. We've said to people, I wouldn't buy that book if I was you. So there is just real world interactions maybe.
Yeah. So yet again, by keeping the number of practices low, you can roll your sleeves up. And is that sort of one of the unwritten sort of things that you and your team offer your network?
100%. That's what me and Ben do most of the time, is just talking to advisors. And people will laugh because they'll say, oh, how many advisors do you want? And I think the old joke was, oh, we're going to stop at 15. And then every time we meet people, they say, hey, where are you going to stop? The current joke is, what's the next periodic table for the next AFSL, which is not happening. So there is an element of me and Ben being a part of these conversations and trying to help.
There's a real move or a gravitational pull for some licensees to look to co-invest in their best practices. Given that you've already got one, you started with one, you're the OG in doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something that you've ever done or that you'd ever look into?
We give a lot of value, and I'm not going to lie that, if you had stake in some of these businesses, you would think, hey, can I just give them more and can I grow them more? So like you would invest in any business that you thought is a good investment. So yes is the short version, but something that makes it really easy about our world is we really aren't entangled in everything. There's no SMAs and there's no entanglements. So maybe not.
So it's not off the table, but not part of your C-suite sort of business to-do list.
No, I think it would be for a reason. And again, I'm not trying to speak ill of other businesses, but it seems like when they're saying, hey, we want to own a part of your business, it seems like we're just going to get further entangled into you and not necessarily add value versus other places. I'm sure they are adding value, but I think the advisor needs to be really careful of what that looks like.
To be fair, you're started in 2019. It's heading towards the end of 2025. It's 6 years. A lot of other licensees are presented with succession planning,
mm-hmm.
and they've just had longer tenure. So, I suppose the trigger or the requirement to have those conversations are probably just a function of age.
And 100%. And we probably are having some of those conversations.
And you might get there.
Now.
We might have a convo in 5 more years, and you might go, I'm getting a few more people looking for employee share schemes and stuff like that as well.
And I think maybe my point is, yes, I would talk about it, but I would come at it in the same cultural way where it would be somehow separated, or can you somehow disconnect the AFSL and the business so that you aren't trying to manipulate these businesses with your AFSL power?
So you've got a lot. You've got young advisors. You speak. You're 42 years young, but you do have a very youthful approach to the industry. How does your practices and how do you believe we're going to bring organically people into businesses that are great, such as the ones you've got, either through the PY or whatnot? What's your sort of 2 cents worth on that?
Into the industry as a whole?
Well, into the industry, and then I'd potentially, what would you look to do or support into your group's business? Because it's a lot easier to, although you don't want to grow different cultures, if you keep the same culture and they just bring on someone who's completely aligned,
mm-hmm.
you before you know it, you've got another 70 advisors in 5 years without having to increase your bandwidth.
Yep. There's a few parts, I think, to that question. Ironically, we're back at the start. Like AMP Horizons was great. I think the how you train new advisors that come into the industry is something that the industry needs.
Who's going to do it?
Well, they had that motivation to go, hey, we'll train them and therefore you can then do A, B, and C. Yeah. So, I don't know is my official answer.
We've got the world's largest pool of funds in the industry funds. They've got a mass amount of people who require financial advice. I would have thought the logical pathway is that.
Like through industry funds?
Just helping out the people who need the advice. You know, like it's makes sense. They're bigger than any of that. What you've just mentioned, AMP and all the banks are dwarfed in comparison to the size of the financial size, but also the size of the requirement. And yet I don't hear much agitation for it, and it would solve so many problems.
I agree with you. I think one thing the industry has done maybe incorrectly or a misstep was this broad sweeping name as a financial advisor or a financial planner, and they've tried to put everyone under that banner. So back in the day, these guys who were lifeies, and I think they probably went, you know what? I could sell more life insurance. If I wasn't a life insurance salesperson, I was a financial advisor. So they changed that title. And I think that what we've never kind of escaped that. So I think if you, like your question before was, would you do a scoped advisor who was an insurance advisor? Just call him an insurance advisor and let him do insurance advice. Totally fine. Your industry fund advisor, just call them an industry fund advisor so they know exactly what they can and can't do. And then us advisors who have had to go through all the education changes and all that kind of stuff, it is that high designation. So I think there should be a clear path to different types of financial advisors and how they can move through that system. And you're probably right. Your industry funds should be the step one.
Yeah. And with your network, do you have any PYs or if it can be correct?
Yeah.
And do you like, so... PY is a bittersweet designation. It's good to get them. It's hard to keep them. And once you've got them, what do you do with them?
Mm-hmm.
So what's your advice to your own practice and indeed other listeners as to what you would do if you had PYs coming through?
I think one of the problems as being a financial planning, self-employed financial planner is this issue of how do I employ advisors or how do I get PY? I pay them a salary, I train them up, and then they leave to start their own business.
Well, they leave because they're poached on LinkedIn.
Correct.
Yeah.
That's a really tricky problem to solve.
Yeah.
So what we've done on the what if advice side, where you're kind of having, you're now business partners and they're a part of the ecosystem and they're owning a part of the clients. When I'm talking to these guys who are turning their staff into PYs is think forward a few years. What is this plan and how do you keep them? And maybe it is ownership or at stake or something, so you don't invest a couple of years of into these people that then just go and leave.
Some of the tips and tricks people have been doing is they've been looking at and doing some scoped advice, for instance, rather than holistic, and because you can do that at a lower entry point, and so you're not cannibalizing the clients that would otherwise be for the partner in the one. But and also I've heard where an advisor might be looking after the parents, and they might come and look after the 30-year-old. Is there any winners or any winning strategies you're seeing in your network?
Not in that sense, like where you've kind of said, hey, go try this or go try that.
Yeah.
My biggest thing is trying to look at it more like an apprenticeship as opposed to an employee, where you are bringing something, you are training them up, you're giving them something. It's more than just I'm going to give you a salary and can you look after these clients? So it's really about just both sides, really understanding what they're getting out of that transaction. I think there's probably some big businesses who do just go and employ PYs because they're a bit cheaper. When we're talking internally, it's more like, how do we make that an asset to your business?
It's funny, you mentioned about the concept of an apprenticeship and all of us know people who've gone through apprenticeships. And as an employer, as someone who's taking on an apprentice, quite often they work 3 days, 3 weeks for you, and then they go to TAFE for 3 or 4 days.
Mm-hmm.
It would give the business a breather. They'd meet people. Ensemble tries to be that, and you probably have your own things, but there's nothing like that that's available. And our education and learning is not even built like that.
And I think that's what the problem is with the PY. It's like, hey, you know nothing, but I get you a $90,000 job and I'll train you up and pay you all this money. It doesn't financially make sense.
Yeah.
If it was an apprenticeship where I'm actually teaching you and I'm paying you apprenticeship wage, that model seems to make more sense to me.
Yeah. And it's just, I mean, it's got to do with the limited factor. Now, I'm having fun not talking about compliance and how you keep yourself, your nose clean, but I'm going to ask it.
Sure.
So, because risk management is a less sexy, but still a pillar of what you do.
Mm-hmm.
So how with certainty Are you as a licensee confident that your people are putting out best practice advice? And what tools and tech does your licensee have?
Look, what we do is we put on advisors, we do nothing for a year or 2 years, and then we audit them. That's a joke. So what happens is we put advisors on.
My pause,
yeah.
My horrified pause.
So no,
I was busy scrolling.
I know.
Looking at that, going, "What's this guy talking about?"
No. So we have this benefit of being young. We don't have any previous issues that we've got to deal with. We're post FOFA. We're post all these things. So we just got to build a dealer group from the startup. So one of the things that we do is we have a SOA checklist where the advisors tell us when they're writing advice. There's a vetting regime when they start. We check it all. We do this weird thing where we actually also look at the advice, not just the compliance. Is this good advice for this person? So we got the vetting, we've got the internal audits, we have the external audits. We also do this thing where we'll actually look at the bank account and we'll reverse engineer audits. So we got a bit money that's coming in. We go, oh, what's that $5,000? Let's go see who that's belonged to.
Interesting.
So it's kind of like the you can't bullshit a bullshitter. We are advisors. If there was someone that was trying to get stuff past us, what would that person do? And that's what we're looking for. So yeah, we'll just use a bit of common sense.
And your capacity to do that, do you a combination of people who work for you and technology? And
But again, like, we're using technology from day one. There's no manual forms or PDFs that advisors have to fill out. It's all through things like Typeforms or digital sheets. A lot of it's automated. A lot of it will get sent to teams for doing things. We do vetting. I would say our average is a day and a half that we're able to turn it around, because we just have a number of people doing it, a number of people looking at it. Sometimes it'll get triaged, and me and Ben will personally look at some of this stuff. So I think we just have a really good system.
You've got very much that intimate feel. How do you and Ben balance this business? It seems like, I mean, you've known each other for years, there's commonalities and whatnot, but I imagine some days there's a lot on and it's tough, and other days are easier. What do you do to keep that balance and that sanity?
We are very different people. If you've met Ben, and a lot of people will know both of us, and we have very complementary personality types. If for nothing else, maybe it's luck, or maybe that's why we have stayed together so long. I definitely have, you know, a home partner and a work partner. So it's that. There are certain things that he's better at than I am, and there's certain things that I'm better at than he is. And whether some of it is explicitly said and some of it is implicit, but yeah, we're able to just use our strengths. Sometimes one of us has to play good cop, one of us plays bad cop, and it's not always the one you think it's going to be. Sometimes we have to change roles, because it is, I think the other part that some advisors do miss is that this is really serious stuff we're dealing with. You know, you're out there and you're trying to help Mr. and Mrs. Smith, but we're also trying to protect both you and the client and all the other advisors on the license and all the other clients.
Their counterparty risk is something you forget about.
They definitely do. So sometimes when we're making decisions or we're doing things, sometimes it's hard to see why. We try to explain why, but there's just a bit more to this industry. It is very serious. You can see what's happening to some of these big businesses. We're talking about this very jovially, and I always will come across that way, but it isn't. It is a serious industry that we're in. We're dealing with people's money. We're dealing with people's lives, and you just can't take it. You know, you need to think about what you're doing.
So there are horses for courses. You came out of the largest licensee in Australia. You went self-licensed, which by the very nature of it makes you the smallest licensee in Australia.
And
then now you've grown into, you know, an emerging licensee as far as size. Your fee regime is fixed. People can reach out to you if they want more information or anything like that. Where do you see... You mentioned vertical and horizontal sort of things that you're looking to do.
Yep.
What are some of the things that in your brain, some of the ideas that you're looking to bring to the table over the next sort of year or so for your advisors?
There is just always more things that you can do. So some of it is your personal, like you're going to speak to these advisors and say, hey, well, what's your goal in your business to grow A, B, and C? But we have our own goals between myself and Ben and how are we trying to grow our business? So some of those growth is just internal, you know, business decisions that we will make in the near future. But when we go and do these ventures, we just share them with the group. Hey guys, we tried this thing. Maybe you can try it too. Do you want to add a mortgage broker? How can you integrate accounting? What is it? And it's not can you just sell your clients more stuff? there is synergies that we can do, and it's about how do you integrate it into your business to make everything just work more efficiently.
When you say share things, do you have a platform to share?
Yeah. So
what do you use?
I don't know. I think maybe we may have been the first group on Ensemble to have our own chat group when you guys
the
first,
ultimate Dorothy Dixon.
Yeah.
It's 56 minutes in.
So we... Well, when you guys moved from the platform over onto the app or whatever it was, and I had this problem. I want us to share with the advisors, but it can't all be one-on-one. Can I make it group-based?
Yeah.
So it was Emily and Clayton who I was speaking to at the time. I was like, can I have our own group? And then I think you guys were like, yes. And then for a minute, it was a public group that people could see and people would try and join. And I'd just say, sorry, it's only for Cobalt advisors. And then I think you ended up making it private, which is fine. But it was just that, hey, can we use this space as a way to communicate? And as you would know, it's ebbs and flows. You get out of it what you put in.
100%. And I think when you did that, we probably had 3,000 advisors on the platform. We're now just under 11,000, which is almost everyone. And what we're getting from people who don't have a closed group like yourself is they're asking for new initiatives such as, can we have a closed group?
Mm-hmm.
So potentially for default or whatnot, what you established maybe 4 or 5 years ago is now, because quite often the whole premise of the platform was no one who's not an advisor's there, but sometimes people want to have a degree of intimacy within that that subtext as well. So
Like how it's almost like your client helps you, your business evolve, I think it's the same thing that what we're doing. So advisors will say, hey, I want to do this thing. Like, oh, I didn't think of that. Let's go this direction. And then it is the sharing. So we can use that for sharing people's experiences. The best value for all advisors is other financial advisors through all these different mediums.
And look, we're mixing it up next year. We're doing a lot of events. We're taking 44 events on the road. We're actually coming, if you didn't know, we're coming to Brisbane for our All Advisor PD Day. It should be a big event. I hope to see a few of your people and yourself.
I didn't know you were coming to Brisbane. I'll be there at Bellzone. I flew down to Sydney a few times for them.
I know you did. I know you did. And so next year we're taking on the road to Brisbane and then to Victoria. But we're also doing 44 other ones. Labs a bit more intimate, because people now are, you know, ideas are sort of everywhere, and they now want help implementing. They want intimacy, and you know, we're following that theme.
We had that. We've had advisors cry out from Perth and from Northern Queensland saying, can you bring the advisor games? And it's really hard for us. Obviously, it's not a business for us. It's just us trying to get these events together. And we've tried to reach out and go, hey, can we at least get 30 or 40 advisors in Perth before we put this event on? We don't have that power that you guys have. But if anyone wants us to put an event on anywhere, let us know.
This is a great conversation. I think we'll continue on with that. And look, now that we're parlaying into another thing, but yeah, we are going out to meet that. I think the people want that intimacy. They want to have that what you've got.
Yep.
You know, I will be very interested in chatting with you in a couple of years, because, you know, by being very certain about the people you want, by being very confident, you're going to be quite sort of desirous to people come to you. And then does that change if you grow, and how do you do that? I think that's an interesting challenge, right?
Yep.
Like it's when you had no one, you had to get people in order to get economies of scale. But then once you get past that, what do you do? And what was right for you last year may not be right for you next year. It's that whole change thing. But you've been on this podcast many times, not this particular one, but Kieran says, this gentleman's been, you know, he's been a great contributor to Ensemble. You've flown down a couple of times. So I'd like to personally thank you on behalf of us, because we're all about the positive evolution of financial advice. Your own career really follows an evolution.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like that when you started, you were at the end of the last era.
Yep.
Flicked the lights off at Horizons, and you've started in the new era. And you've really run with it. So it's, although it hasn't been a 30-year career, in the 10 odd years, it's really been a tale of two halves, hasn't it?
Yeah, and it has been good. And I remember back in those days, it was things like, I tried my own YouTube channel, and how does video work, and how do I do editing? I'm like, great, well, I want to share this now with other advisors. So I did a few even like offline stuff with Emily trying to share. So that theme of just trying to teach advisors has just been something that I've enjoyed doing. So
And we live in a world where advisors are so scarce that competition's not really a thing.
And that's probably what I was trying to get to too. There is no competition. Like you do reach out to some advisors and they're trying to hold some of their stuff back. I promise you though, if you share it, you're going to get something back. These huge businesses don't want to talk to these younger, newer advisors going, oh, what can you tell me? I promise you a lot. I got a guy who's got his own, AI servers and he's trying to do, different bots, etc. There's a compliance thing that sometimes makes me hold my breath and I need to breathe in and breathe out and make sure we're moving in the right direction with AI. But we're going to blink and they're going to be AI's SOAs. It's not a today thing, like for me at least, but in the near future, there's going to be. And I think that evolution, that theme is just going to keep happening.
So, look, thanks on behalf of all of Ensemble. Thanks for not only this podcast, but whatnot. We look forward to seeing your smiley face and some of your team members up there in Brisbane.
We will be there.
So, thanks very much and good luck.
Thank you.
Tonight's presentation.
Yeah.
Cheers.
Thanks, guys.